We're going to chat about this in this episode, but here's a fun thought exercise. In your entire life, what album have you listened to the most? Was there something you latched onto in middle school that has continued to be a source of comfort? Did your college roommate blast an album every day that earwormed its way into your head? Maybe during COVID, you found yourself discovering a new band, hoping that one day we'd get to go to concerts again, and you'd finally see your new favorite band in action. And yes, I am still bummed out by the multiple shows I missed because they were canceled by COVID. Or maybe that answer is different every few years because you find yourself stuck in a rut or simply want to change. And you know what? That change is pretty fitting for today's guest. Carlos Baker moved to Northern Germany without much of a plan. He just knew he and his family needed a change. And since then, he's released multiple albums with his CK Baker band, written a book, and had a lot of fun along the way. We're chatting about the albums that have most impacted Carlos's songwriting, his worst gig, and why discipline is crucial for his mental health. I'm Joey Held, this is Good People Cool Things, and here's my conversation with Carlos Baker. To kick things off, can you give us your name and your elevator pitch, but also the type of elevator that we're riding on?
Oh, I don't know what that means, but my name is Carlos Baker. I'm out here in Northern Germany. Excited to talk with you, man.
Likewise. Do you remember the first song or artist that really made an impact on you?
It's funny, man. I don't come from a super musical family. Like, music wasn't important in my family, which I get such a kick out of because I live with music on, and my kids, as a result, have kind of, I have four kids, and they're all, because everything we did was surrounded by either me practicing or listening to music, they all have that. I didn't have that when I was a kid. My dad had, to this day, I don't even think he has a favorite artist, which is kind of funny. He's not a music dude. But, and my mom listens, she now mostly just listens to my music. She's like my big fan. She's like, I'm just sitting here listening to your CD, honey. I'm like, oh, mom, you're the only one listening. But I would say, so I'm 50. I'm a radio guy. So, you know, I feel like I grew up with radio telling me what to listen. So if I think back my earliest memories of, let's say, when I'm, you know, 8, 9, 10, back then, growing up in Rhode Island, it was the top 10, like every night, kind of that top 10 or whatever it was. So I feel like I remember it was like the Michael Jackson stuff back then when I was a kid. No one specific. The band that I connected with as an adult, the first band that I connected with was Living Color. Do you even know who that is?
Oh, yeah.
I would have been maybe 15 or something when I started at least getting a little bit away from the radio telling me what to listen to and listening to tapes or CDs at that point. And Living Color, for some reason, I connected with them. I know all their tunes, kind of know all the lyrics to their songs. Got to see them a bunch of times. I love Corey Glover, the lead singer. He's such a monster, man.
Yeah, sometimes I miss the days of discovering things through the radio, or like even MTV or Fuse, I'll give the shout out to as well, formerly Much Music, the Canadian MTV, called it growing up. But I don't know, for some reason, it's like hearing a song on the radio seemed to hit a little differently like that, you know, like when you'd discover something like that, as opposed to just, you know, hearing it on like a soundtrack while you're watching TV or something, or like even just, you know, streaming and a random song comes on. Like for whatever reason, it was like being in the car, sitting and like actively listening as opposed to doing something else. It's just so interesting, like how, you know, different songs like that come into our lives and then we, you know, what we grab onto.
Yeah. And also how incredible, like how insanely different it is now. Like my kids they literally don't know what the radio is. They're like, what? FM? What is FM? Like it's so bizarre how different the world kind of, or the new generations kind of ingest information, specifically with music. And when I say I was a radio guy, I mean, 94HJY, where I grew up, was classic rock. And man, they just told, I only listened to that. I wasn't really buying tapes and CDs until I was, you know, kind of when I got a car, my first car. So that would have been 1991 or something like that. But before that, they were telling me, I was listening to like Bad Company and Doobie Brothers and Led Zeppelin, whatever was on classic rock, because we had 92HJY, which was pop music. And I knew I didn't want to listen to pop music. And then 93.3, which I think it was like all alternative 80s alternative music, which wasn't my thing. And I find it fascinating, too, though, that when I moved to Germany and I'd meet guys my age, I'd be like, yeah, man, you know, I like Rush. And they're like, who? And I'm like, well, Rush, you know, Tom Sawyer. And they're like, ah, we've never heard of them. And it's like, what are you talking about? Rush is like a god in the little world that I grew up in of music. Rush was such a part of the I don't know, what would you call it? The music that was spinning every day. At least that's how it was back then. It was kind of the same stuff, and Rush was part of it. And here, the big band here was Toto. Do you know Toto?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I know a couple of their kind of popular songs that were...
I mean, yes, I know Africa by Toto, I should say.
Yeah.
That's my Toto.
And me too. We might know, there might be another one, I can't remember, but that was on kind of in that loop of radio. But yeah, it wasn't until I got a little bit older in college that I really started listening to albums, which would have been with Floyd. Floyd is what kind of, you know, when we went to college, that's kind of all we were listening to, even though that was the grunge time when Pearl Jam and Nirvana and all that stuff was hitting, because I went to college in 96. And yeah, man, that grunge time hit hard. But I was all, at that point in my life, we were all about Dark Side and The Wall. And if I think back, I love asking like music guys, I love asking like, what if you had to guess, because there's no possible way we could do it, a firm answer is, what album have you listened to the most times in your life? And if I had to, you know, guess, it would have to be The Wall, because I've listened to it throughout my, you know, from when I was 18 till now. I still put on The Wall and I'll listen through it, you know, fully through it, and still love it, man, which is the best.
That is the best. I like that. Also, what a fun exercise. I don't know what mine would be.
See, I'm a total album guy, man. I love to listen to, like, I'm right now, for the last 2 years, I've been basically only listening to Wilco and Radiohead, which is two totally different musics, but I've become obsessed with Wilco and Jeff Tweedy and his albums, because I love how he's got so much, he's put so much music out there. And I don't know how familiar you are with Wilco. He's they're a big Chicago band, and poppy. I'm not even sure what kind of music you'd call it, but it's like Grateful Dead, but poppy, basically. And I'm not a Grateful Dead guy, but I just love Jeff Tweedy's songwriting, and I love his albums, and anything that is Jeff Tweedy, I'm a little bit obsessed with right now.
I like it. Yeah, I'm I'd say tangentially familiar with Wilco. I've definitely heard some of their songs, but I don't think I've ever listened to their album front to back of any of theirs. So maybe that's a homework assignment for me after this.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, I go back and forth to Chicago because my best buddy lives there, and I'll often go visit him. And it was probably 2 years ago that he mentioned that. Oh, I met the drummer. That's where it was. I ran into the drummer because he's a friend of his. And I was like, oh, I've never even heard of the band. And I checked them out, and I was kind of like, well, sounds like jam band music to me. And then the more I listened to, the more I got obsessed specifically with the songwriting of this guy, Jeff Tweedy, who is really, he's kind of that, he's got that Jerry kind of godlike stature within that army of Wilco fans, because they're a really tremendously successful band in that they have their own, you know, kind of world of music that listens, of people that listen to him. And the more I dug into his songwriting style and his lyrics and the way his approach, the more I become fascinated with him. But it's not everyone's bag, man. That's for sure. I know I've tried to hand it off to a bunch of friends and they're like, nah. It's so going back, man, I feel like I cut you off. What would be your artist that you've kind of, you think you've spent the most time with?
I was trying to think of this because I do also enjoy listening to albums. And I feel like there was a stretch of time, you know, kind of post-college, maybe to like late 20s, where I wasn't doing that as much. And then I feel like I've gotten back into that groove the past decade or so. And I feel like this is a cop-out answer because it's a greatest hits album, but it's Beach Boys Made in the USA,
which is the most
of their hits. I think the only one that people would be like, where's this song, is Kokomo, which is like pretty late Beach Boys anyway.
So that's so 80s, I think, right? Kokomo?
Yeah. It's like late 80s. And so I was like, okay, I got the crux of the ones in here. And then I was trying to think, it's definitely someone in like the late 90s, early 2000s, alt rock slash pop punk sort of phase, because that's when I was really, you know, hammering albums.
And
those are still ones like now all of these bands are having, like this summer I saw The Offspring, Sum 41 and Simple Plan together, and I was like, these are bands I was listening to all the time in high school, and even if I hadn't heard a particular song for years, I still knew all the words because I was just listening to those bands so much growing up.
So what are you, in your late 30s? I'm just guessing. Or
35. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, it's funny when you, so I'm 50 and I feel like even though, because when did music start streaming? You grew up with CDs or what?
Yeah, I grew up with CDs. Had a couple of tapes. I was just thinking of this too. I had a Dave Clark 5 tape that my dad had that was called Gigantes del Pop. And I thought that was delightful. So that was my introduction to Dave Clark 5, and then learned about some other similar non-Beatles, Rolling Stones, British bands through that discovery.
Of which there are CDs. So many, right? There's so many of those.
Oh, it's outrageous.
Yeah. There's, my buddies here are like, oh yeah, they'll name bands, and I'm like, I've literally never heard of them. I don't know what you're talking about.
You mentioned moving to Germany, and we were talking beforehand that it's a small town in northern Germany. You moved with your wife. Yeah. And I'm assuming you didn't know any German when you were heading over there.
Not only would that be a good assumption, but we've been here 14 years, and I don't know that I know much now, man. German, you know, I've done a terrible job. So we moved here, I would have been in my mid-30s, and I definitely did not know, not even one word. And without going into too much detail, because it would take forever, in my mid-30s, we had three young children, 7, 6, and 4. And I had up until that point, had a, you know, quite normal life. I mean, I was a pretty happy, normal dude like I am today, although I have my demons. And I was hit with depression and anxiety and panic attack, and just got absolutely crushed for a couple of years, where I was not able to function in the States. And through luck and meeting the right people and finally being more honest with what I was going through, I got on the right meds and found help and kind of came out the other side as far as getting to some sort of neutral again, because, you know, with help from the meds. So when I tell the story, I kind of say that the sun came out again, and at least I was able to kind of function in normal human life. And at that point, I was working for a family business, and my wife, from one day to the next, she was like, she knew I was having a hard time, even though I was kind of coming out of it. She knew I was struggling to make sense of what had just happened. And she was like, you want to move to Germany? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, okay. And we, like, there was no planning, there was, you know, no job. We didn't have any money. We had a minivan that Nissan used to make. We packed that filled with all our shit and then put that in a container and then put all our stuff up on top of the car. Anyway, bottom line is we ended up here in northern Germany with no plan, no place to live. We moved into the little apartment that my in-laws live in. And like I said, we had three young kids, 7, 6, and 4. And I was going through, you know, it's with depression, at least in, I can only tell, you know, talk about my experience with me, it was like, not only was there the depression and the anxiety and the, this incredible fear of panic attack. So I got through that with, again, with the help of meds, but then there's like the emotional part of dealing with the shame that comes, at least for me, the shame that comes with like, oh, I wasn't strong enough, you know, to deal with life, or I'm a failure or whatever it is. So now I'm here in Germany with no, you know, my wife went, she found a job right away. She's got her master's degree in psychology. So she found a job, and I'm left here in Germany in this little village. Don't know how to speak the language. We have three young kids that I'm now in charge of, and I'm trying to figure life out. I'm like, what am I, you know, what do I do now? But I think it was the, you know, in retrospect, when we look back at it, it was the greatest gift I could have ever given myself, this kind of new beginning in this wonderful village where we live, where it really truly feels like it's 100 years kind of back in time, where everybody knows everybody. We have about, I think, 1,500 people in this little village. And in many, many of the homes, there's 2, 3, 4 generations living in these farm homes because the people just stay. It's fascinating. And whether I knew German or not didn't really matter. I kind of got to know the community, and they took me in, and specifically as a musician, found a wonderful group of guys that were, I think if you're at a decent, I'm a decent bass player and I'm a decent singer. And if you can sing, like if you're an American dude and have a look and can play and sing, you can always kind of find a place, you know what I mean? So I found this group of guys that were like, yeah, man, come on in. And they took me in, and through a lot of luck and a lot of long days of trying to make sense of it, I came out the other side, and I'm still here, man.
We were talking beforehand how I went to Germany for the first time last year. And as part of that trip, I was trying to learn some German. Would highly recommend not using Duolingo to learn a new language. I think brushing up on a language, totally fine. But I am so confused about German grammar because Duolingo just says that's wrong. It never says why. It's just like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's not helping me learn. But I do know how to say, like, probably, I don't know, close to 100 words in German now. And I can at least sort of fake my way through like ordering food and whatnot. But I was just like, and I think, you know, living in it is obviously the best way. But just for anyone thinking of Duolingo.
First of all, I don't know if it's just German. I do get the sense that German is more difficult than other languages. Like people say that English is easy to learn. I'm not sure. I think for me as an adult, first of all, I've been here 14 years. So I understand in context, I would say I understand 95%. And because I'm not afraid, you know, I'm a dude and I'm not afraid, I can communicate, but it's embarrassing. Like my kids just cringe when I when I try. The thing is, here in Germany, there in Europe, I think in general, they do such a better job in pushing English as a second language, and specifically with the generation with my age and younger. If you're in any way normal intelligence, anyone my age and younger can kind of speak English or at least understand. And then even more extreme, I would say, is anyone in the music, in that kind of that world of artists, of being musicians, and all growing up on English, you know, American music or English speaking lyrics, all my buddies can speak English. And that was the problem, right? So I never got a real job. I was, you know, surrounding myself with these musicians who were all so psyched to be hanging out with someone that they can practice their German, their English with. So to my defense, man, I didn't do a good job trying, but I love my in-laws. They don't speak a word of English. And we, for the last 14 years, I've figured out a way to communicate with them. That's probably why we get along so well. We only understand, you know, 8% of what we say to each other.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I agree. I feel like sometimes the less you can verbally communicate with someone, the more you connect with them. I always like asking musicians this. It's a go-to question on this show. What's your worst gig?
Oh, Jesus. My worst gig. There's been so many. Oh, God. When I was a kid, so I would have been like in my early 20s, I was playing this in an all, you know, it was an all original music. So the kid that was writing the music, he was not untalented. I think he actually had some decent music. And he's, to this day, his name is Chris Rusin out of Boston. And to this day, he's still making music. He happens now to have a PhD in like family business or something. I can't remember what it is. So he's like a, like an executive or something, but he's still making kind of punk music, which I totally respect. He still loves playing. Anyway, we were in a band that we were calling ourselves Liquid. And at the time, I think there was another band that was called Liquid that were actually like creating a buzz. And when we tried to get a gig at a real nice place, I think in New Haven, I don't remember the name of it anymore, but they gave us the gig and we were all like, we just got a real gig. Like we got to practice or something. And then we got there and we, you know, we were setting up and this guy was looking at us like, I don't think this is, you know, I think he thought we were a different band. You know what I mean? Like, and we weren't good, you know, we were trying and the music was okay. But at the time we had no business being on a real stage. And we all knew that the guy was looking at us like, yeah, you're not the Liquid from the magazine. But that was it's a good memory.
Yeah, that's a good experience. I like it. I like it.
Are you a musician?
Yes. Yeah.
What's your thing? You a singer-songwriter or what?
I play guitar in a band called Burning Years, and right. I occasionally do the smooth backup vocals as well.
Oh, I like it.
Depending on the song, so yeah.
are you like a savant? Like what type of guitar player are you? High level or what
oh,
are you doing?
Absolutely not. High energy, I'd say. I like to run around and have fun, you know, bouncing around the stage. Nice. I'm thankful we have another guitarist in the band who is far more technically skilled. I never took lessons or anything like that. Just, you know, self-taught would play. I think I had a Guitar for Dummies book growing up. And then it was somewhere near the third or fourth trying of like Kumbaya where I was like, okay, I don't like this. And that was like around the time I learned about what tabs were.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, let me look up a tab of a song that seems easy and then play along with it. And that's.
Yeah. And you and I are on the same page because I'm a self-taught and although I put myself in positions to learn more, I've never done a good job. And for whatever, you know, they say musicians have that mathematical mind, but for some reason, the theory and all that stuff has just eluded me, but I've muscled through and I'm I think much like you, I'm a decent bass player and. I get the sense you were about to ask from songwriting. The songwriting stuff it's so interesting because I'm not a real guitar player. I can fake my way around a guitar, but I'm not, you know, I don't know chords and all that. I don't know like a lot of chords and all that stuff, nor am I a piano player. So I've written, you know, I have 100 songs and I've done it really, I'm really disciplined in bringing the songs to life and I'm super hip to Cubase, in my case, Cubase, but I don't play a chorded instrument. So everything I do from a melodic standpoint, I'm faking, which is kind of embarrassing, man. Like, you know, although I don't know how hip you are to any of the DAWs, any of the Cubase, but most of them have kind of these cheating ways to plug in chords. So, you know, you don't always have to be a monster, you know, musician to kind of create at least a demo level version of songs. And that's what I've been doing that for over a decade, man, where although as I've gotten older, I have been more, I'm definitely playing more guitar now, but in the end, I'm a bass player, man.
I love it. I love it. I also wanted to touch on your book, Songs for Ivy, because songwriting is one thing. Writing a book, a little bit of a different beast, I imagine. Or did you kind of try to approach it the same sort of way?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question because, yeah, man, it's first of all, I don't know how anyone in life, in all any walk of life, and I often ponder this. I'm definitely a ponderer on how people become so sure of the direction they're supposed to go with their life. I still haven't figured it out. You know what I mean? Like I'm not that guy. But the songwriting happened very much very organically in this process of where I was trying to post depression, kind of figure it all out emotionally and try and make sense of what happened. And there's no real easy way to explain it, but at least for me, it was like I was in another part of my brain for a couple of years, and or another part of my mind or reality or however you'd look at it. And I think when I was trying to make sense of that, songwriting was so important to me because all that stuff was coming out. Again, it really revolves around the emotion of shame. Shame has followed me to this day, shame and kind of self-doubt. But and songwriting was just integral in getting that stuff out, especially in the early times when there was so much negativity in my soul and in my heart that it just needed to come out. And it was wonderful that I had the time, and I was very aware of stuff wanting to come out, and I was capturing it and disciplined on writing it down and kind of following it up. In 2016, in December of 2016, my kids were, my daughters were in their teens, and they were like me, they were readers. So we were buying them like young adult books. That Christmas, we bought them a bunch of young adult books, and that I can remember it vividly. It was a Christmas day, and I was reading the back of like five of the books that we bought them. And I'd read anything because we were in Germany, and I didn't know, that was before I had a Kindle. So I was reading the back of the books, and I'm like, young adult books are, you know, it's the YA genre is interesting because it's not so much about fine prose. It's about a story that younger people can kind of absorb and you know, understand and connect to. And not being a real writer, because, you know, I'm not. I mean, the reality is I'm not, I never expected that I'd sit down and write a novel, and certainly not high, you know, high prose with some brilliant approach to writing. But I was kind of like, I feel like I could write a YA book. I think I could do that. And I have watched I've raised my daughters. They were at the time, I think 14 and 13. And I was like, I feel like I could do that, you know? And on January 1st, I took out an old shitty computer we had upstairs, the laptop, and I just started. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have an outline, no specific idea. But much like songwriting, where it was really just trying to, not really trying to get in the flow, because it was a different approach with songwriting. It was just kind of happening, and I was capturing stuff as it wanted to come out. In this case, I sat down every single day, every free minute that I had, and was kind of hoping stuff would come out. And it did, oddly. I did it for 18 months every day, made myself crazy because I was staying up late at night and getting up early in the morning. And you know, I kind of get like that. And I did it for 18 months straight. And the book ultimately ended up at about 130,000 words. There was one main character and story arc. And then there was, I think, five other stories that kind of weaved through. And it came to an end. And, you know, I can remember where I was when it came to an end, because it felt like it had come to an end. And I was like, holy shit, I just wrote a novel. Like, and I recognized, I at that point, I was like, I don't know if it's any good. I hadn't shared it with anybody. Ultimately, I spent a little money on a developmental editor. So not an editor, not like a line editor, but a woman from Israel that helped me work through the entire book on a kind of a macro scale. And ultimately, we got it down to under 100,000 words. And she was quite, you know, quite bullish on the book for a first go. And I put it out, and, you know, friends and family love it, and I love it. And much like having, you know, much like putting an album out and having a physical out, like physical CD in your hand. I think the day that that book came in the mail and I had it in my hands, it meant something to me, man, you know, 'cause those that self-doubt and lack of that constant fight for me of not feeling like I'm a successful guy. Those are the moments that I definitely can be like, hey, man, I started something. I finished it. I ain't the next Kafka, but I did it. And to this day, I am very, very proud of the book. It means a lot to me.
That is fantastic. I also love the nod to Kafka there. I was just in Prague. I went to the Kafka Museum, so fresh on the
mind. Dude, I only said that because I happen to be reading at the same time I'm reading two of his books, Metamorphosis and The Trial. And it's just by chance. That's why I said it. I should have said Dostoevsky. It would have been much smarter. just proving that I know how to pronounce Dostoevsky, I think, is important.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I'm impressed. Color me impressed.
And my job is done here.
Yes. I think that's just we don't need to go into, the deep psychology behind it, I guess. But you said you kind of made yourself crazy with writing every day for 18 months. But I think that's an important sort of distinction. I know some people are like, oh, I've got to get a word count every single day. I think just getting in the habit of writing, carving out that time in your day, even if it's only like 5 minutes. There's a newsletter I subscribe to that's called Funds for Writers by Hope Clark, who's a mystery writer. She's got probably like 20 books out there by now, like just very, and every newsletter starts with kind of a letter from the editor from her. And she really kind of harps on like, real writers will find the time to write. And she'll give the example of like, I've got grandkids at home. I still want to go to the gym. I've got all these other things going on, but like, I'll find 10 minutes here. If I know a day is going to be crazy, I will hole up in a shack if I have to for a few minutes just to get it in. And I think that's just like such a good reminder. And it doesn't have to be for writing. Like it can be for, whatever activity you're doing. The really important stuff, I think you'll find the time to do, even if it does drive you a little insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've used the word a couple of times, is that discipline of saying, for me, in order to maintain my mental health, which without mental health, there's like anything in life, without health, there's nothing. So in order for me to maintain my mental health, I have to continue to kind of, keep the creative kind of part of my brain active. And because I found, I just did it to myself, man. I just spent 5 months in Chicago and I was working, proudly so, working, 60 plus hours a week and making some money, which was important. But I didn't play music almost at all. I would play, I'd play through my tunes at night, but I wasn't able to give it the time that I would normally give it. And unfortunately, I felt it. It started, the stuff that I know where it's taking me started. I started getting those feelings of kind of, that loss of control and all these things that I have to deal with. So I feel like for me, the discipline of giving myself time, it's like going to the gym. I mean, for me, it's, and I totally agree, specifically with writing. And my buddies are like, oh, that's so cool. Or my friends and family are like, so cool that you wrote a book. And I'm like, dude, listen to me. You should write a book, because I'm telling you, it is such a wonderful experience to have to sit down with a blank paper. Just the exercise of being like, what kind of stuff can I create in my dumb brain that I think has value to put on, to put down on paper, man. And, in my case, which kind of fascinates me, the way it worked itself out, is the main character in this, much like probably anyone that writes their first book, the main character was essentially me, my childhood. And I found it fascinating to have to dig deep into into those recesses of our soul and be like, what kind of stuff happened when I was a kid that I haven't thought about in 40 years, or whatever. And man, that exercise was wonderful. There were times when I would have would write stuff via memories from a childhood and be like, I perhaps haven't thought of that in 30 years and maybe have never shared it with anyone. And even if it's not a negative, necessarily a super negative experience, I feel like bringing anything out that was down there is, there's value to that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, it is such a, for lack of a better word, cathartic process, I feel like, and getting that stuff out there, which it's, I'm glad you got to experience it. And I am also glad that you're encouraging your friends to also at least, you know, try.
Well, my friend, in the classic answer, especially with songwriting, is the classic answer is anything. If I were to try and write lyrics, they would sound cheesy. And it's like, dude, all lyrics sound cheesy. If you step away and look at lyrics in general, they're generally pretty cheesy. Like it's such a subjective statement. You know what I mean? I mean, of course, there are really hokey lyrics, meaning they've just been done a million times. But
like happy birthday, just the worst.
Yeah. I mean, get over yourself. Happy birthday. Hubba Nagila, come on. I feel like the process of allowing yourself to dig in and let stuff come out, it's more, to me, it's more, you know, in the end, I am a songwriter and I still am dreaming of making a living from my music. And, you know, I have 3 albums out there in the world now, but in the end, there's nothing better. There is nothing more kind of satisfying than that moment when, at least for me, when things are happening, there's, you know, for me, a lot of times I read every single night. I read for a couple hours, doesn't matter what it is, but I always am reading something. And often it's a phrase or sometimes just a word, which metamorphosis is top of mind right now, because I saw that word and I jotted it down. I was in bed, you know, 12:30 at night, jotted it down. And from that lyric, from that word or kind of phrase came an entire song. And I've been lucky that that's happened a bunch of times, but nothing is more satisfying than that, man. When you know something's bubbling and it wants to come out and you capture it and it's in front of you and you're trying to find the melody, that's the greatest, man. And you know, that makes me happy, man. Like when I'm happy, that makes me happy.
I love it. All right, Carlos, you're almost off the hook here.
All right.
But we always like to wrap up with a top 3. And I feel like maybe we got a sneak peek of at least one of these. But who are your top 3 artists that you feel should be more widely known?
Oh, God. Okay. Well, definitely. Yeah. Wilco, anyone listening, check out. They're new. One of the things I love about this guy, Jeff Tweedy, is he continues to kind of reinvent his stuff. And his newest album, it's called Cousins. And I love it, man. So wonderful. Another guy that I adore is Alexi Murdoch. Do you know who that is?
I don't think so.
Oh, Alexi's the best, man. His music is super prolific. He only put out one album in the late 90s. I think it only had, it was like 10 songs. But it's very strange. A bunch of those songs ended up on in TV series and on commercials. For some reason, they really translated well to that world. So there's songs where you would actually know, I think, oddly. But one of the most beautiful songs is called Orange Sky. It's just such a gorgeous song, but check that out. And then Shaky Graves. Do you know who Shaky Graves is?
Yes, yes.
I love Shaky. I got to see him actually live in Hamburg, I guess maybe 2 years ago. No, well, it's pre-COVID, so I guess 2019. But Shaky's great, man. If whoever doesn't know Shaky's got to go dig it up.
Yes, I will co-sign that one.
Nice. I like that you know Shaky, man. I feel like so often when I'm like, dude, have you heard Shaky Graves? And they're like, what? Is that a name?
Is that a skeleton that's dancing? What
I think
is
his
that?
Real name is Alejandro. His real name is Alejandro something, a Spanish name, but he goes by Shaky Graves.
It just rolls off the tongue so nice. I mean, Alejandro does too, but
yeah, that's one of those shows where the opening act came out and he was really, you know, he seemed like a good kid, probably a local Hamburg guy and singer songwriter and doing his thing. And then Shaky Graves comes out and you're like, holy shit, there's a star. Like he carries this charisma with, you know, there's just a ray of sunshine around him. Monster entertainer. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful songwriter as well.
Fantastic. And like you said, you're songwriting as well, creating music, getting up into that pantheon. So if people want to learn about you, where can they find you?
Yeah. I just did an album. Well, 2022, I spent 6 months in Chicago and worked with my first experience working with a real producer, a guy named Brian Deck, kind of an older, you know, towards the end of his career. But an amazing kind of experience to work with a real producer that has an approach, and specifically the pre-production process, working with a guy that is like, okay, we have a lot of work to do before we go into this studio. And that was a wonderful learning experience. I made a 9-song album with all his studio guys, all also a little bit older. And it meant it was just an awesome experience. The album's called Find Your Way, and it's under my band name, which is CK Baker Band. So download it, check it out. It's a decent album.
I love it. Carlos, thank you so much. This was great.
I had a wonderful time. I appreciate your time, man.
And of course, we got to end with a corny joke, as we always do. And this one was actually a recommendation from another guest on the show, Tanya Lawson. So thank you, Tanya, for this joke. Where does a Martian keep its teacup?
Where does a Martian, I don't know. Where does a Martian keep its teacup?
On its flying saucer.
Oh, Jesus.
Get after it today, people. Good People, Cool Things is produced in Austin, Texas. If you were a fan of this episode, go ahead and hit that follow button. That helps more people hear the show. You can send me a message, joey@goodpeoplecoolthings.com. Thank you to all of the guests who have been on Good People, Cool Things. You can check out all the old episodes via goodpeoplecoolthings.com. As always, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.